Have you ever been given feedback about your professionalism? Is professionalism a behavioral standard? And who sets these standards? How does one's speech, accent, word choice, and cultural communication style factor into professionalism? My hope is that you can see where this is going. So, what would it be like to take a step back and critically examine the idea of professionalism in a clinical supervision context? Welcome to People of Color in Psychology, the show that explores mental health topics specific to culture, diversity, and communities of color. I am your host, Jack Zen. As part of our Hispanic Heritage series, we have Dr. Baez Powell, a licensed psychologist in Virginia and Washington, a SciPac provider, and offers mental health services in English, Spanish, and American Sign Language. Dr. Baez Powell has held clinical positions as a staff psychologist and diversity and inclusion psychologist, was a faculty at the George Washington University in Washington, D.C., and the recipient of the Early Career Award for Distinguished Practice Contributions to the Advancement of Psychotherapy in 2023, which was awarded through APA's Division 29. Dr. Baez Powell also has two published articles in 2023, which addresses racism in the therapeutic context. The first article is titled, Ramifications of Clients' Use of Projective Identification, Racism, and Enactments of Otherness, a Nascent Clinician Struggle Inhabiting Her Identities in the Therapy Room. The second article is titled, Decolonizing My Therapeutic Identity, Going Beyond the Surface. As a Latinx psychologist, Dr. Baez Powell will be discussing the decolonizing approach to psychology supervision and training, and how supervisors and students can be deliberate in this form of practice. Dr. Baez Powell, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. This podcast feels very special and exciting to be a part of.
Well, I'm glad to also have you be a part of this, and congratulations on the award, as well as the two recent publications. Can you just walk us through your journey? Any memorable events and circumstances that influenced how you got into this work?
Absolutely. I think that I came into the field of psychology with a lot of life experiences beforehand that really molded who I wanted to be as a psychologist. And part of that was growing up in the Dominican Republic, immigrating to the United States afterwards, experiences of political trauma that were part of my development in my adolescent years. So coming with those experiences into psychology, I found myself very much developing forms of thought that were incredible. And I felt very energized by being part of the psychoanalytic field, really, and found my stride really in object relations, more centered on relational psychotherapy. And that felt very culturally congruent, right? The attention is very much focused on relationships and what that means for the individual within themselves and in the world that they inhabit. But what I found that I wasn't seeing was a lot of the experiences that I'd grown up with, right? Like, what does it mean to be a racialized body? What does it mean to have political trauma? What does it mean, right, to have, you know, culture be a part of psychotherapy? And I was really struggling with finding myself within some of these theories and the ways that they were being taught, and looking for a way that I could find myself really fully, not just fragmented, within this area of psychology. And from there, turning towards liberation forms of thought, which are really derived from emancipatory theories in Latin America.
The part about your history coming from Dominican Republic and some of the political trauma that you experienced, can you provide some context or some history that you would be willing to share?
Yeah, so part of it is the infrastructure of the Dominican Republic and its economic system. And so a part of the political trauma that I experienced growing up was the incarceration of a family member due to the economic status and flux that was happening in that time period.
Oh my gosh. I can't believe just, I just can't imagine that kind of stuff happening here, where people are incarcerated because of a political affiliation.
Absolutely. And I think that that is a big difference in what I came into higher education with. Some of the experiences that I'd had were not something that were always included as part of my development as a psychologist. There really was a strive for a separation between, right, the person and the formation of the psychologist. Even so, to like things that are happening in your day to day, even as a, you know, as a woman of color living within a city, part of it for me was anytime I entered the classroom, I had just had some kind of experience. Walking from my house to the metro, taking the metro, going to class, that inherently as a woman of color inhabiting the body that I do came with potential harassment or being followed or catcalled. And so there was a way in which I found myself in higher education where a lot of the communication was around the separation between person and psychologist. And I'm talking, right, like day-to-day examples, but that's not even to address the political situation or socioeconomic status. And so that is part of what led me to more of like finding and looking for liberation approaches to psychodynamic theories.
Oh, well, thanks for sharing that, because as you're describing it, and just given your history, I can't help but also feel this therapy stuff doesn't even make sense for me. Like, I can't even connect with it given the experience that you just shared.
Right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Like, there's no space for me to be doing this.
That's really framed what I think the last 4 years of my, you know, early career profession has looked like, because similarly to what you're expressing, it was really difficult for me to find the separation between what I was expected to be as a psychologist and how I wanted to truly be a psychologist operating in this world that we live within. And I think focusing on supervision and training and decolonial approaches to supervision and training, part of where I keep coming back to is how are we approaching our students? And actually what we fall into is recreating potentially like systemic, right, political, immigration, cultural harm, because our systems right now are not set up for that. And we can see it as early as beginning conversations entering graduate school about professionalism. And for me, professionalism and that word and that rhetoric is just a form of gatekeeping into higher education. Because when we think about professionalism and standards of professionalism, we're really talking about physicality. We're talking about hair. We're talking about body type. We're talking about socioeconomic status, right? What means do you have to buy the clothes that you might be presenting with? We might be thinking about language, right? How accented is your language? What, right, quote unquote, how academically eloquent are you, or quote unquote, right, how colloquially do you speak? And this is a setup. It's a setup and a system of domination. And so a lot of what I've been trying to focus on and reframe are people are going into higher education to learn how to be the professional that they want to be. And that already for me sounds different, because I'm asking you, what professional do you want to be? I'm asking you to think deeply about the ways in which you want to approach this work and what I can offer you to help you get there. As a psychologist, I might ask you to think deeply about, yes, how you might present yourself in terms of entering the therapy room. I think that that's something that we all, right, need to learn what projections can fall on us or how people are reading us in the room. I think one example that was actually very popular in my graduate program is just where, like, simply the wearing of your engagement or marriage rings, right? Because you are disclosing something within that. And it's a form of privilege in our society to be married. And how are clients going to take that in and potentially bring it into the therapy room and want to talk about it? And that for me feels really valuable, right? To be able to think deeply about these things. But there's a difference between that and being ascribed how to be a professional, when you might already not belong in this quote unquote professional higher education setting.
It really reiterates that experience for students and early career folks that you don't belong in this field.
Right.
If you must behave, act, and say things in a certain way.
Absolutely.
And I think something that many of our Latinx speakers have mentioned as part of our Hispanic Heritage Month is this fluid identity flow of who they are, how they express themselves, and bringing that into the therapeutic context. And it's really relational. I think that's just great to be able to be free to be able to do that. I would also imagine, as you were saying, if I'm ascribing that you must be a certain way, it does cut off a part of who you are. Now, the other piece, you know, this is really critical too, because you're talking about a decolonizing approach to supervision. So first of all, can you define for us what does the colonizing mean for you?
Right. When I use the language decolonizing, I'm really taking from liberation psychology. And liberation psychology aims to center the integration of individual and systemic experiences, does not keep them separate. It definitely goes into acknowledging, right, the systemic harm that you're bringing in. And from there, really looking at the individual. So part of what it might affect is diagnosis. Part of how it might affect is where do you localize the trauma or the difficulty in lived experience that clients might be bringing in. And it really aims to foster like cultural authenticity, to really center the individual and their strengths, and to really focus on resisting self-blame and internalizing that harm.
So it looks as though you're exploring the client's inner world and really seeing them as cultural beings of how they may have internalized some of the external systems around them. So in the place of supervision, because let's say, I mean, just by sheer numbers, the field, about 80% of psychologists are white. And so you're talking about supervision and training. So if let's say a supervisor is white, how would they even facilitate or even consider this decolonizing approach to supervision?
Absolutely. For me, part of what I would start recommending across all supervisions is starting that first supervision and just building the relationship, building safety and relationship. And that for myself starts with coming in and saying, this is who I am. These are my identity features. This is how I practice. I would love to learn, what are your identity features? How do you foresee that being part of the work? And depending on the level of training, right, if you're seeing someone who's in their first year of clinical work, you might take more of an active approach of, right, like, this is what we're doing. And I invite that this guidance, this mentorship, this part of the supervision of teaching to also include, like, how would it come from you, given your identity features? For someone who might be more advanced clinical training, it might be being able to identify also how that person wants to be supported in the development of their identity that they're forming as a psychologist.
Hmm. I also noticed that as I asked that question, it was in many ways centering on whiteness. We can also internalize racism. And mm-hmm. So it really the question, I think a better question for me to have asked is how do supervisors in general take this approach? Yeah, rather than just putting onus on white psychologists.
Absolutely. Yeah. And part of it is making room for, I emphasize that first meeting of supervision, but across the journey of supervision, it's making room for being curious about how does your supervisee, what do they know about healing in terms of themselves, in terms of their culture? What do they know about joy and care, and right, like, how do they communicate these different areas? Because we might all culturally come from a different way of approaching healing or this type of communication or this type of relationship or how we see empowerment or how we see joy. And so something that happened for me is that having white supervisors across the board, and this is something that I speak about in one of my papers, is that out of all of the supervisors I had in training, I only had one supervisor of color, and she was a Black woman in a college counseling center. But there were 20 supervisors that were all white out of this 21 supervisor experiences that I had. And being Latinx, that was quite challenging because there was very much an understanding that there was this one way of approaching therapy. And actually, one of the things that I got a lot of feedback on that was very jarring and harmful for me was in the way that I communicate things. I come from a high context culture. We can be verbose, and part of that is also engaging in the relational piece and these forms of speaking. Some of it might also be just language. English is not my primary language. Sitting in supervision, looking at transcripts and saying, like, the messages that I was getting is that what I had said in session and where I was at with clients was absolutely great. However, can you please change this one aspect of you that's very culturally congruent with who you are? I am not a low context person. And one of the ways that I know how to be in relationship with people is in my manner of speaking.
Oh, I'm cringing as I'm thinking about that, because it's literally splicing how you talk. How we talk is a way in which we express ourselves.
Absolutely. It was quite harmful. I saw myself going through this transition in my education where I went from feeling like I was getting a lot of positive feedback, seeing objectively also how I was doing, you know, grade-wise on evaluations. I had shared with you before getting high honors in actually our comprehensive exams for our master's degree. And then in some of these interactions, there was a lot of messaging of like, but you're doing something wrong, right? Like, you don't quite fit into this, or you're being too aggressive, or ways of silencing also. And I was taking that in a lot. So I did see changes in how I was being as a psychologist, because I was trying very hard to mold myself into this feedback until I hit a roadblock. I just felt like I was not in the room with clients anymore. And I started making big changes. I started putting artwork on my walls that was bilingual. I started allowing myself to speak the ways that I do. And it made a really big impact, not just for myself, but for my clients too, that also felt more connected.
Oh my gosh, I'm sorry you had to go through that. You would imagine the field has grown.
You would imagine.
Yeah. Where the field has developed. Oh boy. Oh, geez. Okay. One of the things too, if let's say question was guided more towards as a supervisor taking on this decolonizing approach, being able to engage your supervisees and asking these questions, which is, you know, tell me about your perspective on healing, just really trying to get to know the supervisee's philosophy. Mm-hmm. So what happens if you're a supervisee and you're trying to take on this approach? What might that look like in, say, a conversation or an interaction with your supervisor?
I definitely have to make space for supervisees of color to feel some apprehension, to feel some anxiety, right? To be welcomed into sharing these identity factors, to sharing in potentially cultural factors, right? That might influence who you are as a psychologist. I definitely think that that can come with some turmoil, and also like continuing to develop that relationship in the supervisory room feels to me extremely integral to identity development, because what the supervisee has internalized in terms of what they've been taught about professionalism or what they've been taught about themselves or projections that they've taken in, or, you know, internalized racism, right? We're talking about race right now, but it might also be internalized homophobia, internalized transphobia, right? All of those things are definitely still going to impact us as psychologists with the clients that we see. And so part of it is, if the supervision is set up in this way, we can take professional identity development to that extent and be true, right, mentors. True teaching can happen, true identity formation. Because what you see a lot of right now, and what I hear a lot of from supervisees, is that they leave grad school, potentially going into internship or potentially going to postdoc, And there's now this like very normalized talk about, yeah, I took this time to unlearn a lot of what I learned in graduate school. I took a lot of time to heal from what happened in grad school. And that has become extremely normalized, much more so than really is, I was going to say than is necessary, but that can be mitigated in some ways. And I think it's Nancy McWilliams maybe that talks about the amount of harm that trainees take in. And in this identity formation as a psychologist, there is a lot of harm that you take in, not just from clients that we might not know necessarily always have to set boundaries in terms of what we're taking in from clients, but also within our faculty, our supervisors. And it can really emulate other forms of racialized trauma, right? Or immigration trauma. And we are re-traumatizing the students that we have by not opening the conversations in these ways, by not really going beyond.
It's like you're, yeah, I just can't just accept them because you need to provide the support to help them grow. And there, I guess, you know, depending on which institution, there's a philosophy of, well, growth means we're going to mold you this way, as opposed to growth, we're here to really support you and help you define what being a psychologist means for you.
Exactly.
So, Dr. Baez-Powell, you've actually shared with us some of the challenges that you've gone through as a woman of color. I'm wondering, do you have any additional tips or messages you'd like to share for our listeners?
I think it's very important for me to share also like sides of my experience, which is why I published the two papers that I have. Like I do try to approach it from a emotionally evocative standpoint, and part of sharing my experience, part of why it feels so important for me is because as psychologists trained in these series, trained in being able to think the ways that we do, sometimes that we can really get away with being able to have challenging conversations from an intellectual standpoint and not always do our work from the emotional standpoint and really integrate those two aspects of ourselves. And I think part of what I'm saying is we don't have to get rid of the theories that we have now. We just have to augment it with approaches like liberation psychology, which are really taking in lived experience into the therapy room. And what are we introducing to our students? A lot of my experience didn't feel very relatable because we were reading all of these papers that were from the approach of a white psychologist seeing someone of a marginalized or oppressed identity. And the opportunity to work with someone during my internship year who had been doing research within their program across the United States about what access to literature was being provided in graduate programs that came from BIPOC psychologists. And they were still in the middle of this research. And I can't tell you if they did publish it. I don't know that they did. But what they were coming across is that it was like less than 15% of the accessible literature in graduate programs were from BIPOC writers. And that says a lot, right? That says a lot in terms of what we're exposing our students to. It says a lot also about the approaches that we might be taking to psychology. Right now, it is taught very much from a Euro-American form of thinking as if that is the only way of thinking. And it's not really allowing BIPOC forms of healing into what psychology can really look like. And, you know, when we talk about psychodynamic theory, we talk about Freud, the father of psychoanalysis. And there's this way that we talk about it now as if a lot of the theories that Freud really proposed did not come from his own challenges, right? Questioning race and politics and gender and other identity features. And it's really changed. And it's something that, you know, liberation psychology provides a lot of opportunity in reclaiming what psychology and healing can really look like.
And honestly, I would have loved to have read your paper in grad school because, you know, we learn about, or at least I was fortunate enough to have been exposed to object relations Mueller, Winnicott, you know, and then, but it didn't go beyond that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And especially in the context of supervision, such a critical role in our professional development. So this is why I'm just so glad to have you here today. And I really appreciate your work and really your contribution. The other part that we didn't really get into today is you also know American Sign Language.
Yes.
And I cannot stress just how critical that is in terms of really providing access to folks who otherwise may not seek out therapy. Mm-hmm. And so for you to have gone through doctoral training and also learn American Sign Language on the side,
mm-hmm.
that is incredible.
Thank you. It is definitely something I'm very passionate about. Accessibility for me is so important at so many levels, and this is one area that we really have to challenge ourselves to do better.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad there are folks like you that are out there that are really trying to make a difference and really trying to make psychotherapy accessible. So, Dr. Bayez Powell, any final words or final thoughts for us?
I'm really fighting against that dissonance between who we are as people and who we are as psychologists, and really focusing on like integration of both. I think it goes a long ways into how we approach teaching and supervision in our work. And it goes a long way to inviting those that we are teaching or supervising or seeing as clients in, and have a different level of investment and growth.
All right, Dr. Bayez Powell. Well, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you. I appreciate you.
I hope you liked this episode. Please subscribe and share. We love to hear from you, so send me a message on LinkedIn or email. The People of Color in Psychology is brought to you by the Multicultural Counseling Institute, and I'm your host, Jack Sutton.